A science story, huh?
Is NYU scientist the...
I felt it.
It was that golden moment.
Because science was on my side.
Hi everyone, I'm Ben Lilly, and welcome to The Story Collider, where we bring you true personal stories about science. We have shows coming up in Pittsburgh and San Francisco, and a special show this Wednesday about science fiction at the 92Y as part of New York Super Week. Check out storycollider.org for times and tickets. This week's story is from Karen Hopkin. The story was recorded in September 2014 at Oberon in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
When my son Christopher was 4 years old, I ordered a DNA test to determine the identity of his father. Now, don't get me wrong. It wasn't that I had, like, no idea who his baby daddy was. I wasn't ready for the Jerry Springer show. It's just that things got a little complicated in the month he was conceived. I'd been trying to make a baby for 2.5 years, and as a single woman, I faced this special challenge of having to acquire some of the necessary materials every month that I needed for this project. At first, I relied on friends who were only too happy to provide home delivery service. But as time wore on and my friends wore out, I started ordering the material online. It was much less messy that way. So in the month in question, when the time was right and ovulation was imminent, I phoned the clinic to request my usual table, the one with the padded stirrups, and I was surprised to find that I didn't have any swimmers on ice. You see, I'd taken to actually buying in bulk and then freezing the leftovers because I figured, you know, they wouldn't go to waste. So I then called the, but my cupboard was bare, so I called the sperm bank to get a rush delivery. And they told me that it would arrive from California the next day by noon. Now, here's where things get a little weird, because somehow their guarantee did not, I don't know, alleviate my sort of feeling of desperation that I was experiencing. And I started thinking, where else could a girl get some sperm? It had been a while, actually, and so it took some time for me to come up with the answer, men. Men have sperm, and sometimes they're even willing to share it. So I remembered that I had this friend from California who was going to be flying into D.C. to testify before Congress, and I thought I could just hop on a shuttle, meet up with him. Now, he'd actually been a contributor to the project in the past, so this was not entirely unusual. I could meet up with him, and I could be back in the clinic tomorrow morning to, you know, meet the rest of the troops. So I hopped online and tried to sort of find on the congressional calendar when he might be actually there or where I could find him. And in the midst of my cyber-stalking my friend, I never did find him, but I stumbled across some other information that reminded me of another friend I have. This guy is an astrophysicist, and he lives right here in Cambridge. So I thought, even better. This doesn't even involve an airport. So I dropped him an email and said, you know, hey, what's going on? And he wrote back and said, well, you know, nothing. What's new with you? And I said, well, I'm trying to make a baby, and I'm really jonesing for sperm. Do you have any you could spare? And he said, I get off work at 5 o'clock. Okay. Now, I'd never been intimate with this individual, but so he comes to my house, and it's kind of awkward, you know. Hello? How are you? Would you like a glass of water? So let's get you out of those pants. Now, we gave it the old college try, this rocket scientist and I, but there was something he forgot to tell me, I guess in all the excitement. He failed to mention that although he got off at 5, he had to be back at work at 6. So, this is a lot of pressure, you know, even for people who are familiar. And so in the end, we experienced, I guess what I would call a failure to launch. But I figured that's okay, you know, I still have my appointment tomorrow morning. Everything is good. Everything is good. Okay. Next day, I arrive at the clinic. And I find that the sperm, however, has not. It turns out it was stuck on a FedEx truck in Natick or Nahant or Newton, I don't know, someplace. But it wasn't where I needed it to be, and it wasn't going to be anytime soon. So I am pretty much right on the verge of complete and utter freakout, okay? When from the back of the clinic comes a nurse, and she says, come right back. You know, we have your sperm ready for you. And I thought to myself, what sperm is this? Where did it come from? Did she steal it from another patient? You know, even worse, I'm imagining that there's some staffer in the back frantically whipping up an emergency sample, you know, to keep the crazy woman in reception from going postal. But, you know, at this point, I don't really care. I say, bring it on, you know. 9 months later, my son is born. And he's the best. I mean, he's absolutely fantastic. He's totally perfect, everything, you know, I could possibly ever have wanted. But in the back of my head, I'm thinking, I don't know, do I actually really know for sure who his father is? And, you know, was the sperm, I think, did the trick? Was that actually the sperm I thought it was? It seemed to me that this would be a good thing to know. I mean, not only does it have sort of medical implications for the child for the rest of his life, but, you know, if I were going to tell him his story, you know, of how much he was wanted and how he came to be, you know, to be able to do that, it seemed that I should know what story to tell. So the astrophysicist actually wanted sort of no part of any kind of, you know, paternity test. And, you know, he said there was no way he could possibly be the father. And, you know, I trained as a biologist, as a biochemist, actually. And so I tended to side with him. But I was raised a Catholic. So, you know, I mean, the way I learned it... You know, if you're even in the room with a naked male member, you may already be pregnant, you know. And so I thought I'd better check. Now, at this point, I guess I could have ponied up for another sample from the donor himself. But that stuff doesn't come cheap, and, you know, I am kind of cheap. So I got in touch with another family who'd used the same donor, and I thought we could just compare the kids to see if they're siblings. Now, that may sound odd, but I actually had been in touch with a couple of families through an online resource called the Donor Sibling Registry. And we'd met these families, and we'd gotten together, sort of, you know, a 21st century, you know, modern family reunion style events. And they're fantastic people. We absolutely adore them. And it's just, the kids got along really well. And it's really, it was very interesting to see that the each kid looked like his or her mom. Okay, so like in the eyes and like the cheekbones, and basically, you know, the face. Okay, so each kid was kind of a clone of the mom, which was weird. So it led my own mother to declare that obviously the donor had no genes, which I know actually is not correct. But he didn't have dominant genes for facial structure. He did have genes for the ears, okay? So from the get-go, you know, my son's ears really stood out, and I don't mean just from the side of his head. When he was born, they were hairy, and I didn't even know that was possible. And for a while, I fretted that the donor might actually be a werewolf. You know, I didn't remember seeing anything like that on the profile. But you know, then there wasn't like a box, I guess, to check. You know, does lycanthropy run in your family? Well, eventually, my son shed his ear hair, and I would come to know that all of the kids had identical ears. So, you know, this resemblance, you know, sort of boosted my confidence that, in fact, we were legitimate members of this club. But, you know, I didn't want to take the ear's word for it. I wanted to hear from the DNA. Well, it turns out the easiest thing for me to do would be to check the Y chromosomes. So I don't know if you remember much of your high school biology, but women have two X chromosomes, and men and boys, they have an X and a Y. So, you know, every boy gets his Y from his dad. So if Christopher, my son, got his Y from the donor, and these other boys got their Ys from the donor, all I had to do then was compare Christopher's Y chromosome to the Y chromosome from one of the other kids, and if they matched, you know, bingo. So all I had to do was ask for a sample. Now, I don't know if you've ever been in the position to sort of impose on someone that you don't really know that well, you know, with whom you hope to have a friendly and ongoing relationship, someone you don't want to think that you are a complete freak. you know, because I felt freaky even asking to see a photo of the kids before we actually met, you know. I mean, who am I, right? I'm like, hi, I'm Karen. You know that donor you used? Yeah, me too. So why don't you send me some nice photos of your precious, precious children, especially the little boys? You know, it's pretty creepy. And now I wasn't asking for a photo of their kids. I was asking for samples of their children, you know. Well, fortunately, I needn't have worried because I sent, one of the moms an email, and she wrote back straight away and said, you know, no problem about the DNA sample. It turns out she's a cop. So she said, I'm doing buccal swabs every day, you know, on the people I'm arresting. And apparently it was just no big deal for her to do the same thing on her 3-year-old son. So from my days in the lab, I actually have a friend who runs a DNA testing facility. So he sent us a couple of kits, which was basically like, you know, a medical grade Q-tip and a baggie to put it in and lots of paperwork to fill out. So we have swabbed our sons and sent our samples off in the mail, and then we waited. So it's like a week before Christmas, and I'm really hoping that Santa's going to bring me a pair of matching Y chromosomes. And I'm very nervous because here I am. I've gone this whole time thinking that the donor is Christopher's father. But what if I was wrong? Right? What if this dude who lives like a mile away from us turns out to be the dad, and he wants no part of us or our lives. I didn't want Christopher to feel rejected, and I didn't want to get kicked out of this really cool other family. You know, they were totally awesome, and they made me feel really at home. So I was pretty anxious as I awaited the results. December 26th, a mega snowstorm hits the Northeast. Blankets New York and the whole area, 2.5 feet of snow. There are 4-foot snowdrifts separating my friend from his laboratory. But he takes a couple of days to shovel his way into his office. And New Year's Eve, he gives me a call with the news that we actually had a match. So the boys can legitimately call each other brothers from another mother. And I think I can safely say that the donor is Christopher's father. Well, the origin of his maleness. Was I relieved at these results? Yeah, I think so. Even my church-going mother, when I told her that, Christopher's father was the guy I didn't know rather than the guy I did, yelled, "Thank God." But what if the results had been different? I mean, would I have regretted my sort of impulsive, impetuous, you know, seemingly insane sperm-seeking behavior? I don't think so, because whatever it was that happened that month, it brought me my son, and I can't imagine it playing out any other way. Thanks.
That was Karen Hopkin. Karen is a freelance writer and the creator of the Stud Muffins of Science calendar. Karen received a PhD in biochemistry in 1992 and then traded in her test tubes for a keyboard. Former producer for NPR's Science Friday, Karen currently voices stories for Scientific American's daily podcast, 60 Second Science. She's a co-author of the textbook Essential Cell Biology and has written for many magazines, including Science, New Scientist, The Scientist, and Golf Digest. In her spare time, she collects the signatures of Nobel laureates on a 1950s-style autograph dog and is a mom to 8-year-old Christopher. For more science stories, take a look at storycollider.org, where you have archives of the podcast and upcoming events. Also, we depend on listeners like you for our support. If you love the podcast, please consider donating at storycollider.org/donate. Story Collider is produced by me, Brian Weck, Darren Barker, and Ari Daniel. The podcast is produced by Rose Evelith. Additional help from Brooke Williams, Lena Groger, and Justin D'Ambrosio. The theme music is by Ghost. Special thanks to Oberon for hosting the show, and to my curly hair and my sarcasm for being just like my dad's and my mom's, respectively. Thanks for listening.